Florida.
Charlie.
It's perfect for parties or picnics. So serve Pepsi to your guests.
That's helpful, but...
This is the sociable part. Keep plenty of Pepsi ice cold and ready. Remember, it goes fast because everybody likes Pepsi.
Singing still sounds more inviting. May I?
Be sociable. Look smart. Keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi. Stay young and fair and debonair. Be sociable. Have a Pepsi.
But singing doesn't say, pick up an extra carton of Pepsi today. Better yet, get a case.
You do that.
There you are, Jason. There's the house.
Yeah, don't pull in here so that milkman can't spot us.
Yeah. Good, he didn't even notice us.
We're right on schedule.
Put that gun away.
Just being prepared.
Well, we've got time. Relax. We have exactly 14 minutes before he leaves the house and walks down to that bus stop. By now, they'll just be having their breakfast.
Ah, good morning, Princess.
Henry, you did it again.
Ah, there was no point in waking you, Liz. Morning, honey. I'm perfectly capable of making my own breakfast.
But I wanted to have it ready for you. Today of all days. It's just that in the mornings lately,
I know, Mother. Here, sit down. I'll pour you some coffee.
Thanks, Henry. It doesn't seem possible, does it? Only 3 more months and the baby will be born. That's all, only 3 months.
And your baby is going to be beautiful, Liz.
And yours.
Mm. I hope it doesn't look like me. Here you are.
Well, Henry, the decision is due this morning.
Uh-huh.
If that board doesn't make you manager...
I'll just continue to be assistant manager. But with another mouth to feed soon. But darn it, Liz, I've worked hard for that promotion.
And you'll get it. You're the best assistant manager that bank has. There's absolutely nothing to prevent you from getting that promotion, Henry.
I hope not. Well... I'll call you either way.
There'll be only one way. Goodbye, dear.
What's keeping him?
The bus doesn't leave for 5 minutes. He's still got time.
Oh.
Now, you listen to me, Jason. This whole job, we move carefully and slowly. Remember that.
Sure, sure.
We didn't spend weeks tailing him, working this out just to have you get edgy now.
Hey, look. Hmm? He's coming out of the house.
Oh, yeah, I see him. Now, remember... Think, Jason, think.
Sure.
I'll go and join him now at the bus stop. And you keep away from his house for at least 5 minutes.
Okay. Good luck.
The way this job is planned, Jason, we don't even need luck. Good morning.
Hmm? Oh, morning.
Is this seat taken?
No, forgive me. Let me move my briefcase.
Thanks.
There you are.
Thank you. Aren't you Henry Travers?
Why, yes. Yes, have we met before?
Oh, we've merely ridden this bus together a few times. I'm Shirley Brisbane.
Well, how do you do? I'm trying to do a little work before I get to the office, if you'll excuse me.
Of course. Are those loan applications, Mr. Travers?
Oh, you're familiar with this kind of work?
Well, I've been making a study of your procedures. I expect to get a loan from you this morning.
You do? Sure. Let me see, you said Shirley Brisbane. I don't recall your application.
In exactly 1 hour and 15 minutes, I'll expect you to grant me a loan of $50,000.
Yes, ma'am, just like that.
Just like that.
And now, all jokes aside, Miss Brisbane, I do have this work to finish.
Well, go right ahead, Mr. Travers. There's still plenty of time.
Yes?
Ms. Travers, I'm from Commercial Trust.
Oh. Oh, my goodness. I didn't expect anyone so early. I'm not even dressed in the house. But... Come in, won't you?
Thanks.
Harry warned me that the bank might send someone around in connection with his promotion, but I didn't expect anyone so early. Sit down, won't you? I just finished coffee. Would you like some? It's still hot.
No, thanks.
Would you mind very much, Mr.
Collins, Jason Collins.
Would you excuse me for just a few moments, Mr. Collins, while I change my clothes?
No.
What? It won't take me long.
Well, neither will this. Just a few preliminary questions. Please, sit down, Mrs. Travers.
Well,
sit down.
Well, all right, Mr. Collins.
Excuse me, Mr. Travers, but according to my watch, you should be at your desk in 12 minutes.
What? How did you know?
We just have time for you to consider my loan application.
I don't consider that a very funny joke.
No joke, I assure you. At 9:15, I expect $50,000.
Oh, you do?
Otherwise, you'll never see your wife alive again.
What? What are you talking about?
There's someone with her now who won't hesitate to kill her.
What?
Shh. Don't attract attention to us, Mr. Travers.
What's this all about?
When you get to the bank, call your home. You can talk to my friend, Jason. Satisfy yourself that Elizabeth's life depends on what you do.
Then what?
Make out all the necessary papers for a loan. I don't care how you do it, as long as they look authentic. As long as no one stops me, because at 9:15, I'll be in to pick up that money.
I still don't know if this isn't some kind of cruel joke.
When we get to the bank, call your home. Then you can be sure this is no joke.
Well, come in, Mr. Travers.
Yes, O'Malley.
Well, today's the day, sir.
What?
I said, good luck, sir. I hope you get the promotion.
Oh.
Well, just a moment now, and I'll have this gate open. Oh, by the way, Mr. Cromwell came in a few minutes ago, sir. I showed him into your office.
I haven't time for him.
But it's Cromwell himself.
I don't care.
There you are, sir. Oh, Mr. Travers, my dear, dear Henry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Cromwell, but could you wait outside? I've got to make a private phone call.
I beg your pardon.
Please, it's urgent. I can't explain it just now.
Oh? Well, with Forbes ill and retiring, I've decided to approve you for manager at this morning's board meeting, and I came here early to have a chat with you first.
Well, I haven't time. Please, Mr. Cromwell, if you can wait for just a little while.
Oh, very well, Travers. Very well.
Now. This.
Is that you, Travers?
Yes. Are you?
I've been waiting for your call. You're late.
Elizabeth, is she all right?
She doesn't know a thing about what's going on yet.
Let me talk to her.
No. When I expected your call, I sent her upstairs to change her clothes. Your wife's okay so far, but if you want to stay that way, you got a lot of work before 9:15.
Listen, I'll do my best. I'll try to get the money, but what you're asking is almost
impossible. Never mind. You just see that you get it. You don't want to come home and find your wife dead.
But I will. Hello? Oh.
Oh, Mr. Cromwell, good morning. One of the other tellers informed me that you were here. Kind of early for you, isn't it, sir?
Well, now, don't tell me that you, too, have some objections to me being here.
Oh, indeed, no, sir.
Well, good. Then you won't mind if I stand here by your counter?
Oh, not at all, sir.
I want to keep an eye on Mr. Travers' office.
Oh?
And I want to know what he's up to. Now, tell me, have you noticed anything peculiar about him lately?
Peculiar? No, sir. What do you mean?
Well, this morning, for instance, the man seems absolutely frantic. We haven't even opened for business yet. There he is now, rushing out of his office and going into Frisbee's. Now, what do you suppose he could be up to?
Good morning, Henry. Heard anything about the promotion yet?
This loan, Jim, you forgot to add your endorsement.
You're nervous this morning, Henry, but you needn't be. I think the promotion is yours.
Jim... Here, I need your signature. They'll be in for this money in a few minutes.
Well, all right, Henry. Now, let's see what this is all about. I don't recall this application.
Well, it came up at the last meeting. You were at the dentist that afternoon.
Oh, yes, yes, the 14th, of course. Well, do we have the collateral?
Yes, Jim. The stocks and bonds were analyzed. More than sufficient.
Equity Products Corporation. Never heard of it. What do they do, Henry?
A transcript of the meeting is available. I haven't time to go into this with you.
And I haven't had a chance to read the transcript yet. Well, but you signed this. You must feel that it's worthwhile.
I do.
Now, let me see. It's just 9 o'clock.
It is?
And I won't have time to read the transcript now. So I'll sign this on your say-so.
Here, use my pen.
Oh, okay. There you are.
And thanks. Thanks, Frisbee.
Henry, the promotion's in the bag. Relax, Henry.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of Suspense. When Dr. Jonas Salk gave the nation the vaccine against polio, as a nation, we sighed relief. Another enemy of health, one affecting the children, had been conquered by science. Now we can worry about something else. Many people took just such an attitude, and it appeared to be justified. For the first years after the vaccine saw a remarkable drop in cases of crippling polio. But last year, the figures rose again. If the vaccine works, why did America have more cases of polio last year than the year before? The answer is painfully simple. Many people neglected to avail themselves of the vaccine's protection. A minimum of 3 shots is still the recommended dose. And it takes time for maximum protection, for shots must be spaced apart. If you have neglected your polio shots while immunizing your children, you are still in danger yourself. People under 40 who failed to get their shots are now chief statistical polio victims. See your doctor or visit your clinic or health department. Lose no time getting your shots to help stamp out polio.
It's 17 minutes past 9, Mr. Travers. Aren't you finished yet?
Almost. You wanted cash, didn't you?
That's right.
I've got more forms to fill out. I need more time.
Jason expected the phone call 2 minutes ago.
If he's done anything to hurt Liz...
You're in no position to bargain, Mr. Travers. Just do what you have to do.
All right. There. That's finished. Now I have to go to the vault and show these to the guard. Get in and get the money. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Well, you'd better be.
Henry... Do you think we'll be able to have our little chat soon? Now, the meeting is not far off, and
no, not now.
Henry, what is going on? Now, will you tell me?
I can't, and please don't ask me.
Well, I just don't understand.
Here, O'Malley.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Travers. Go right in, sir.
And see that I'm not disturbed. I have a large amount of cash to assemble here.
Oh, yes, sir. All right, Mr. Travers.
Now...
Mr. Collins, can I get you something?
It's 20 after 9.
I know. That meeting about Henry's promotion will be taking place in only 5 minutes.
That don't matter. Who cares about a meeting?
Well, I certainly do.
Why doesn't that phone ring?
I really don't understand why it's so urgent.
2 more minutes. That's all I'm going to wait. 2 more minutes.
There. Set now, Mr. Travers?
Yes, O'Malley.
Oh, Mr. Cromwell's waiting for you just outside. Oh. He insists on a word with you, sir.
Oh, no.
Henry, just a moment.
Mr. Cromwell, I'll explain later.
I want the explanation now.
Let go of my arm.
Don't be a fool.
Don't try to stop me, please.
This cash form I got from O'Malley just now and the copy of the loan application seem, well, they seem fraudulent.
They're not. Frisbee endorsed that application, so did I.
It says here that it was approved as per the meeting of Tuesday the 14th. Now, I sat in on that entire meeting. This loan was not approved. It wasn't even discussed. O'Malley.
Yes, sir.
Now, call the 19th precinct.
No, listen to me.
Go ahead, O'Malley. Now, what is it, Henry? I'm listening.
And she's waiting in my office. Unless she gets this money now and calls him, he'll kill my wife.
Oh, Henry, I wish you'd told me this sooner, but we'll go in there, give her the money, and when the police get here, we'll keep them out of this until your wife is safe.
Thank you, Mr. Cromwell.
Well, good luck.
Okay, I've got it. Where?
Gone.
Oh, my.
What are you doing?
She must have slipped out when we were talking. I've got to catch her.
Now you're lying. Now stop.
Bill, I've got to catch her.
Now. Stop him.
Please, you've got to
let me go, will you?
That's it. Hold it.
They'll kill her. Let me go, will you?
Henry.
Now, Henry, you haven't a chance.
Listen to me.
But I've already listened, Henry, and I think we'd better wait in your office until the police get...
No, Mr. Cromwell.
I'm sorry, Henry. Bring him along, O'Malley.
Please.
Now, go ahead, Henry, and call your home. And tell whoever you think is there that the woman's already left with the money, that she didn't want to take the time to call.
He won't believe me. He'll think she was caught. He might have killed Liz already.
If you're telling the truth, this is the only thing you can do right now. But it's obvious what the truth is.
All right, all right. She was supposed to talk to him herself. He'll know I'm lying.
You've got to persuade him that the plan is working, if there is any such plan.
Hello?
Elizabeth, are you all right?
Oh, darling. I've been so anxious to hear from you. Did you get the promotion?
The what? Oh, Liz, never mind. Put him on.
Who? Oh, you mean Mr. Collins. No, he's already gone. He said he couldn't wait. Henry, are you the new manager?
Gone. Thank goodness.
Just a minute, Travers. Give me that phone. Hello? Yeah, this is Walter Cromwell.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Cromwell. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. About that man.
Mr. Collins?
Did he threaten you?
Goodness, no. He just seemed very nervous, but there definitely was nothing wrong.
I see, I see. Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Travers. Goodbye for now. Well, Henry. The police. Good morning, Lieutenant.
Hello, Mr. Cromwell. Oh, what's happened?
Well, we've been very fortunate, Lieutenant. We just prevented this man, one of our most respected officers, from absconding with a large amount of the bank's funds.
If I was going to steal money, I would have been much more clever than this. They threatened to kill my wife unless I gave them $50,000.
Who threatened? I just spoke to your wife. She doesn't know anything about it.
We're going down to the precinct, and we'll get a full statement. If it adds up to the way it sounds, we'll book this man.
Well, that'll suit me just fine, Lieutenant.
Here's your wife, Mr. Travers. We've just finished questioning her.
My poor darling. Henry, I had no idea what was going on this morning.
I almost wish you had. Then they might believe me. Has my lawyer arrived yet?
He's on his way, dear.
If I'm to be booked, I want to be...
Mr. Travers, when your wife gave us a statement, we checked the entire board of directors at your bank. That man who was at your house this morning, he wasn't on any official business, as your wife had been led to believe. He could have been a burglar posing as an investigator in order to case the house.
That's ridiculous.
Or he could be the man we're looking for. Now, he has no record, so we have no mug shots of him. But the woman...
Yes?
Maybe you can spot her in one of these pictures of various women. All of them from our files here.
Yes.
Yeah, take a good look, Mr. Travers.
Let me see now. No. No. Not this one either. No. No, she's not here, Lieutenant.
Is that a fact? Well, then I'm afraid we'll have to hold you.
No, wait, wait. Let me see that one again.
Which one? This?
No, that one.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, this could be her. Now that I take a second look at her, it could be.
But you're not certain.
How can I be? The woman I saw had blonde hair. This one has black. But the face seems to be the same.
Then let me tell you, Mr. Travers, the woman in that picture is dead.
I don't see how I have a chance, Russell. Just look at that jury. Look at their faces. Every single one of them believes I'm guilty.
I strongly advise you to plead guilty and escape this trial, Henry. You might have been given a light sentence a year or two, but now, without any concrete proof, with nothing to back up your defense, if they do bring in a guilty verdict, well, It could mean 10 years.
10 years.
Counsel for the defense, are you ready to begin your summation?
I am, Your Honor.
Very well, then please begin.
Good luck.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we concede that the evidence offered in defense of this poor man has been purely circumstantial. However, let me point out that even circumstantial evidence, whether of guilt or innocence...
Mr. Prosecutor, if you wish to hold a conference with one of your witnesses, kindly do so outside of this courtroom. This defendant is entitled
I'm
to...
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but the police lieutenant here has just brought me some information which has a direct bearing on this whole trial.
Very well. Please give the court that information.
The police lieutenant has just informed me, Your Honor, that a similar robbery was attempted this morning at the National Exchange Bank, and that the woman has been caught. She is the sister of the woman identified by the accused. She has confessed to the crime for which this man has been on trial. The state wishes to make a motion for the dismissal of the indictment.
That motion is granted. Case dismissed.
Henry?
Oh, good morning, Mr. Cromwell.
I trust the new manager feels at home. Henry, by the way...
Yes, sir?
Well, after all, you can't blame me. I saw the young lady this morning, and this isn't the first time that a bank official tried to run off to Mexico with such a tasty young dish.
Suspense. You've been listening to Perfect Plan, written for Suspense by Peter Fernandez. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of Suspense.
Hi, maybe you'll recall this tuneful reminder of times past. This is Dennis James with something else worth remembering. It's this. You're so right to stay regular with Kellogg's All Brand. See, it's the normal, natural way to youthful regularity. The whole brand content of Kellogg's All Brand supplies your system with all the bulk-forming food that you need every day. There's only one All Brand. It's Kellogg's All Brand. So relieve irregularity from lack of bulk, as millions do, with a bowlful of Kellogg's All Bran each morning. A-double-L-hyphen-B-R-A-N. It's Kellogg's All Bran.
Heard in tonight's story were George Petrie as Henry, Elizabeth Lawrence as Shirley, Paul Potter as Cromwell, and Patsy Bruder as Elizabeth. Listen again next week when we return with Two Came Back by Ronald Dawson and Joseph Cochran from a story by Jules Archer, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. News analysis next, followed by latest CBS News and Have Gun Will Travel on CBS Radio.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. Liveband.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents...
X minus one.
Tonight, Appointment in Tomorrow by Fritz Leiber. The first angry rays of the sun, which surprisingly enough still rose in the east at 24-hour intervals, pierced the lacy tops of Atlantic combers and touched thousands of sleeping Americans with unconscious fear because of the unpleasant similarity to the ray from World War III's thermonuclear weapons. This was America approaching the end of the 20th century, America of the mask fad for women and the neo-Cretan dress styles, America of your local radiation hospital, of the endless war and the loyalty detector. In his bedroom, in the Thinkers Foundation, George Helmut slept.
Your calculus to the nucleus, adding a quantum equal to the resultant of G sub 1 prime. Repeating, the quantum...
His educational sandman purred learnedly in his ear, droning tensor calculus through the night, filling the hours that used to hold man's formless fears and floating anxieties with the rigid form and anchored shapes of mathematics. Precisely at 8, the sidereal alarm went off.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, my head. Oh, shower. 96.8, commence.
Under the soothing spray of the body temperature robo-shower, Helmut took a deep breath and cast his mind to the limits of the world and his knowledge. It was a somewhat shadowy vision, but he noted with impartial approval, definitely less shadowy than yesterday morning.
Off. Dry blast. Commence.
Employing a rapid mental scanning technique, he cleared his memory chains of false associations, including those acquired while asleep. He felt the snap of clearing non-thalamic reasoning returning as the brain surged into clear, sharp control.
Off. Clothing. Color key 705.
He stepped into his clothing, the severe tunic, tights, and socksons of the modern businessman. He smiled. The next big move had come to him in his sleep, as many of his best decisions did, because he utilized the time-saving technique of somno thought, which could function at the same time as somno learning.
Attention, robo-locator. Category, rocket physicist. Classification, genius level. Time limit for search, 20 minutes. Commence. Take dictation. Dear fellow scientist, a project is contemplated that will have a crucial bearing on man's future in deep space. Ample non-military government funds are available. There was a time when professional men scoffed at the Thinkers Foundation. Then there was a time when the thinkers perforce neglected the professional men. Now, both times are past. I would like to consult you this afternoon, 3 o'clock sharp, Thinkers Foundation, signed, Georges Helmut. End of dictation.
The president is waiting to see Maisie, sir. He has the general staff with him.
Martian peace to him. Tell him I'll be down in a few minutes.
Huge as a primitive nuclear reactor, Maisie, the great electronic brain, loomed over the knot of hushed-voiced men. Its front was an orderly expanse of controls, indicators, telltales, and terminals. The upper ones reached by a chair on a boom. This was the machine with a million times as many synapses as the human brain. The machine that remembered by cutting delicate little notches on the rims of molecules. This was the machine that timid cyberneticists and stuffy professional scientists had said could not be built. Yet this was the machine that the thinkers, with characteristic Yankee push, had built and named, with characteristic irreverence, Maisie.
Have you the questions for the day, Mr. President?
Here, Mr. Helmut.
I see.
The question on the Pakistan crisis is a little touchy. I don't know.
If there is enough data to answer it, Maisie will do so.
Well, of course, I didn't mean to. Of course.
You will excuse me, gentlemen, I will code the questions for Maisie. Oh, section 5, question 4. Whom would that come from?
Number 4, physics, Upperly and his research team.
I see. Thank you, Mr. President. While I'm coding the tape, there will be time to watch the takeoff of the Mars rocket.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, I've often wanted to go to New Mexico. As a matter of fact, I've always wanted to go right through to Mars.
Mr. President.
My chief of staff thinks the project should be under the Army instead of the Thinkers Foundation.
Mr. President, this is the way Maisie designed the project.
Oh, I know. That's what I told him. Still, I wish you people could bring back a few of those wise little devils from Mars. It would be a good thing for the party, the country.
It's quite unthinkable. The telepathic abilities of the Martians make them extremely sensitive. The conflicts of ordinary Earth minds would impinge on them psychotically. Only the thinkers can contact them because of the clear training and errorless memory chains. Perhaps someday in the future... Ah, there goes the rocket.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I am ready to submit the question tapes to Maisie. Stand back, gentlemen.
Oh, well, sorry.
And now... All right, gentlemen. Maisie is thinking.
The question tape, like a New Year's streamer tossed out of a high window into the night, sped on its dark way along spinning rollers. Curling with an intricate aimlessness, it tantalized the silver fingers of 1,000 relays, saucily evaded the glances of 10,000 electric eyes, impishly darted down a narrow black alleyway of memory banks, and reaching the center of the cube, suddenly emerged into a small room where a sweating fat man in shorts sat drinking beer.
Here it comes. Get off my lap, honey. I've got work to do.
Can it wait?
I said get.
Ow! You didn't have to do that.
When Maisie thinks, she thinks. Open up another beer.
Look, I'm not a robo-barmaid.
Honey... Do what you're told, or I'll ship you out where they'll work some of the upholstery off that frame, slopping radioactive mud.
You don't have to get nasty, Jan. Here's your beer.
Yeah, that's better.
It makes you fat.
I like to be fat. It makes our relationship more poignant. Pass me the questions and get over to your keyboard.
You're a greasy pig.
But such an attractive pig. Start taping. Why, that dirty...
What's the matter?
One of the questions. Does Maisie stand for Maelzel?
For what?
Maelzel.
Does it?
Look, you just keep sitting on your brains and let me do the thinking. Tape. Maisie does not stand for Maelzel. Maisie stands for amazing, humorously given the form of a girl's name.
Who is Maelzel?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Huh?
It's a story. Maelzel's chess player. About an automaton that was supposed to play chess. Poe proved it had a man inside it.
Oh, and they want to know if Maisie... They're wrong. Maisie doesn't have a man inside it. Just a lump of conceited lard. You could hit me with that. Look at my dress.
Get me another glass of beer. I must have come from the physics section of the Research Institute. Opperly and that ape Farquhar. Well, we'll look into that. All right, start taping. Question one. The midterm election vidicast should be spaced as follows.
Morton Opperly's living room was quite behind the times. Instead of reading tapes, there were books. And instead of a 4x6 TV screen, there was a Picasso, still faintly radioactive from being smuggled out of the Manhattan crater. Two physicists faced each other across the table, old Mr. Opperly and young Mr. Farquhar.
About that male Zell question, Willard. Why do you keep teasing the zoo animals?
Because the thinkers are charlatans who must be exposed. We know their Maisie is no more than a tea leaf reading fake. We've traced their Mars rockets, and we know they go into orbit 500 miles above Earth and stay there until it's time to come down with the latest miraculous Martian mental science.
But we've already exposed the thinkers very thoroughly. You know the good it did. Ah, Willard, the age we live in wants magicians. A scientist tells people the truth. When times are good, when the truth offers no threat, people don't mind. But when times are very, very bad, well, a magician tells people what they wish were true. That perpetual motion works, that colored lights can cure cancer, that a psychosis is no worse than a bad cold, and that they live forever. In good times, magicians are laughed at. They're the luxury of a spoiled, wealthy few. But in bad times, people sell their souls for magic cures and buy perpetual motion machines to power their war rockets.
Are we supposed to beg off from a job because it's difficult and dangerous?
In my day, Willard, I was one of the frightened men. Later, I was one of the angry men, and then one of the minds of despair. And now I'm convinced that all of my reactions were futile.
Exactly. You reacted. You didn't act. If you men who discovered atomic energy had only formed a secret league, if you'd only had the guts and foresight to use your tremendous bargaining power to...
Willard, we scientists weren't the stuff of which cloak and dagger men are made. Can you imagine Oppenheimer wearing a mask or old Einstein sneaking into the White House with a bomb in his briefcase? That's not the way power is seized. New ideas aren't useful to men bargaining for power. Only established facts or lies are.
What do you want to do? Surrender the world to charlatans without a struggle? The thinkers are vulnerable. Their power is based on a series of lies.
All power is. The greater the lie, the greater the power.
What's it based on? A few lucky guesses, some faith healing, some science hocus pocus.
The power of the thinkers isn't based on what they've got, but on what the world hasn't got. Peace, honor, a good conscience.
They've sent for me.
Who? Jan Tregaron?
No. George Helmut. I got the radiogram an hour ago. They know they'll have to produce a real nuclear rocket pretty soon, and they'll need our help.
I'm afraid, Willard.
You think it might be a trap? After the Malzell question, you think they might want to shut me up?
I'm not afraid for your life. I'm worried about other things they might do to you.
They'd better be worried about the things I'm going to do to them.
Remain on the slideway.
I want to see George Helmut.
May we take your hat and coat?
What the...
Do not be alarmed. Invisible radiations are slaughtering all the germs in your body, while more delicate emanations are producing a benign rearrangement of your emotions.
Claptrap. I can recognize a 14-cycle sonic note when I hear one. Where's Helmut?
This way, please.
Helmut, cut out all this swami stuff. Where are you?
I'm afraid Mr. Helmut won't be able to meet you, Mr. Farquhar. I'm Jan Tregaron. Perhaps you can have your conversation with me.
J. George Helmut waited in a conference room with 24 empty chairs. He had prepared by 2 hours' rest with the Somno teacher on full volume for this conference, having strengthened his mind by hard years of Somno learning, memory straightening, and sensory training. He had assured himself of the executive power to control the technicians and direct their specialized abilities. Together, they would have built the true Mars rocket. But unfortunately, no one came.
Where are they? Report.
No word from the door, Master.
They can't all be late. Did you check?
The calls have been put through.
What response?
Dr. Burnside reports he received the second message just in time.
What second message?
The message calling off the meeting.
Did he read the text of the second message back?
Shall I play it back?
Never mind. How was it signed? The signature.
Signature, Mr. Jan Tregaron.
George Helmut dejectedly examined his organizational charts, and then tapping his stylo on the pad, he extended his mental aura, cleared his memory chains of error, accelerated his cerebral processes by the Haber-Gerson process he'd practiced for so many years. Slowly, he could feel the tight, heart-squeezing disappointment ebb. He was in control again. Tregaron. He was the one to blame. Tregaron, who was so used to working by deception that he must be shown the light.
Well, Willard, how was your adventure among the magicians?
Well, they didn't hurt me.
You're sure? And are you as determined as ever to smash and expose the thinkers?
Of course. Only from now on I won't embarrass you by asking any Mael Zell questions. After this, I shall bore from within.
Now, where have I heard that phrase before? Do I understand that you are becoming a thinker, Willard?
Certainly. That's the only way to smash them. Out-trick all their trickeries. Organize a fifth column. Then strike.
The end justifying the means, of course.
Of course.
I wonder if becoming a thinker doesn't simply mean that you've decided to use lies and tricks as your chief method. Well, you're working with Helmut?
Not Helmut. Tregaron. I'm afraid that Helmut's career as a thinker is going to have quite a setback.
Oh, well. Goodbye, Willard.
Tregaron, I want to talk to you.
Shall I leave?
No, please stay.
Jan?
Stay. You ought to enjoy this. George has that errorless memory chain.
Tregaron, you know why I'm here.
I don't know. I've been sadly remiss on my precognition and clairvoyance exercise. I've been too busy with other things, other people, other exercises. But I don't need Major to guess.
You just went ahead and canceled the conference without consulting me.
You called it without consulting me. Shouldn't do that sort of a thing, George.
I was absolutely sure of my ground, perfectly prepared. I visualized it. The rocket boosting up on chemical power, then setting sail.
Sail? Sail? A nuclear reactor rocket? Oh, George, you're fabulous.
Yes, sail. Thin streams of nuclear reflecting material and the rocket feeding Maison streams behind it. I conceived it all, complete, except for technical details.
George, you are a thinker. A real thinker.
I know.
Now, look here, George. Every man should stick to his trade. Technology isn't ours.
You know as well as I do that we're going to have a nuclear spaceship and actually go to Mars someday.
Are we?
Yes. Just as we're going to have to build an actual Maisie. I helped you organize the thinkers. At least I was your first partner. Our basic idea was that the time had come to apply science to the life of man on a large scale. The only thing holding the world back from this was the ignorance and superstition of the average man and the stubbiness and lack of enterprise of the academic scientists. Their worship of facts, even when the facts were clearly dangerous.
Splendid. Splendid. Caddy, get me another beer.
I'm filing my nails. All right, all right.
Everybody wanted the new world. the trips to Mars, the knowledge of the human brain. All they lacked was the nerve to take the first big step. And that was what we supplied.
Here's your beer.
It was no time for slow and careful plodding. We couldn't afford to check and double check. We couldn't wait for the grudging approval of the professionals. We had to use fake stunts, tricks, anything to get over the big point. Once that was done, mankind was headed down the new road. It was easy to just heal the breach with the professionals and to make good in actuality what had been made good in pretense.
Very good. The beer.
We built Maisie. We built the Mars rocket. We discovered the wisdom of the Martians. We sold the people and the science the professionals had been too high-toned to advertise or bring into the marketplace. But now that we'd succeeded, it's time to let accomplishment catch up with imagination, to implement fantasy with fact. You suppose I would have gone in with you if I hadn't known that someday we'd actually make what we claimed we had already made?
Oh, is that it?
Jan, the day's come, and I'm the man. I've prepared myself.
Caddy, clear the decks.
All right. I know. You just want room to point that fat finger.
I want her to stay.
All right. George, look, every revolutionary wants to see the big change take place in his lifetime. But time for the second step. George, the average man's exactly where he was 10 years ago when we took over. Except he's got a new god. More than ever, he thinks of Mars as a Hollywood paradise with wise men and yummy princesses, like Caddy here.
Do you think I'm yummy, really?
Shut up. Maisie is his mama, magnified a million times. The professional scientists, they're more jealous and stuffy than ever. All they like to do is turn the clock back to a genteel dream world of square caps and quadrangles.
Bravo!
I said shut up. George, maybe in 10,000 years we'll be ready for the second big step. Meanwhile, the clever will rule the stupid. The realists will rule the dreamers. George, did you actually think you could have bossed those professionals? Nuclear scientists? Rocket physicists? Oh, now listen to me, boy. They'd have torn you to pieces in 20 minutes, and glad of the chance. George, you baffle me. You know that Maisie and the Mars trips and all that are fakes, yet you believe in your somno learning and consciousness expansion and optimism pumping like a corn-fed yokel.
There is a place for the man who has the courage to dream.
Sure. In a straitjacket. Oh, George, you remind me of those men who used to put out those lurid little magazines with Caddy's grandmother on the cover in outer space in a stripped-down bathing suit.
My grandmother never...
I said shut up! That's what it is. Frustrated little men playing science god to generations of pimply high school chemistry students and gas station attendants, conning them into thinking they're in the know, sprinkling a few formulas to the garbage and playing Atom Smasher, and then being very solemn about the role of imagination in science. George, the trouble with you is they forgot to take your zap gun and space cadet decoder pin away from you when you turn 13.
That's your honest opinion?
It's more than that. George, get a hold of yourself and quit taking fantasy in the veins. That's an order.
Jan, the strange part of it is that I know as well as you do that Maisie and the Mars trips are fakes, but some things aren't. The human mind, Jan, is a tool that hasn't been perfected yet. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in your philosophy, Horatio.
Who's Horatio?
I said shut up! This is the last full cackle, George. You've been fooling around with ESP, huh? Telepathy? Maybe a little hypnotism?
Maybe.
All right. Guess what I've got in my drawer. Extend your consciousness. Telepath it. Visualize it. Never mind. I'll save you the mental effort. It's a pistol, see? Now, let me tell you something. I got a couple of boys waiting outside. They'll take you by jet to New Mexico. George, congratulations. You're leaving for Mars tomorrow.
Mars?
Yes. I've decided Mars to be the best place for you. We'll arrange it so that your trip is, say, 2 years long. Perhaps in that time, orbiting up there, you'll learn a little Martian wisdom. For example, the big liar must never fall for his own lie. Meanwhile, I got a replacement for you. His name is Willard Farquhar.
But I sent for him to...
Yes. You see, I too believe in cooperation with the scientists. But by subversion. I'll offer them the hand of friendship with a big fat bribe in it. You know what the bribe is? the power to destroy me. That's what I'm offering. Join us. Learn our secrets. Bore from within. Bide your time before you strike. But while he's biding, I'll have him. And when he's ready to strike, he'll find it's not quite the time. Wait a little bit. Enjoy the power. Play with fat old Jan Tregaron like a cat. And by then, I'll have him.
You can't replace me, Jan.
Oh, you were a good man, George. When we needed catchy slogans, ray guns, plastic helmets, fancy sweaters.
I warned you, Jan. Don't underestimate the mind. The human brain. Even Caddy here is a fascinating instrument. For example, I had a little talk with Caddy last week.
Very boring.
Ah, but useful. But when we were finished, her mind had something it didn't have before.
You always were educational, George.
Caddy, look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Now, put your hand on his arm. Now, take his gun.
Caddy, are you crazy?
I've got his gun. What now?
You see, Jan, there is a place for the dreamer, the man who believes, who can use his mind. I'm going to get rid of you, Jan, because the man who dares to dream will rule. Caddy, look at me. Look at me. Point the gun at him. Look at me.
I can't anymore. It's too ridiculous. Jan, take your silly gun back. It's too heavy.
What? Caddy. Caddy, I command you, look at me. Look at me.
The power of the mind. Hey, boys, come in and get him.
I don't understand. Caddy, look at me.
Oh, all right, I'll look at you. Poor Superman.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features You Go by E.C. Tubb, which proves that for pure chilling horror, nothing can beat cold, hard facts. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Appointment in Tomorrow, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Fritz Leiber and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Ted Osborne, Dean Almquist, Pat Hosley, Bob Hastings, Arthur Hughes, and Charles Penman. Your narrator was Floyd Mack. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband Tom and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it.
So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
And you are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and you've been listening to Scald's Hull. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of us here in Vancouver, please have a safe and happy weekend.